we're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The Creative Entrepreneur, making and selling physical goods. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Welcome back, friends. I'm Katie Hunt, and this is Proof to Product. On today's episode, my guest is Reese Spikerman. She's an e-commerce conversion expert who has spent more than 15 years working closely with brands on their online marketing. Today, she helps e-commerce brands quadruple their monthly revenue with website conversion optimization and email marketing. On today's episode, Reese shares trends that she's seeing in the e-commerce space, including SMS marketing. We talk about how to find hidden money in our e-commerce shops, including three leaks to avoid and three ways to boost online sales. We also talk about how to balance a beautifully designed website and the aesthetics of that with functionality that encourages customers to purchase more frequently. You know, today we talk a lot about thinking through our marketing with our ideal customer in mind. So, for example, how can we highlight our products in a way that truly communicates the benefit to our customer, why they should buy? How can we lay out our website to encourage more sales? Now, this is something that we discuss a lot in my Proof to Product Labs program. We've held trainings, we've held community coffee chats, and it's a common discussion in our general forum. How can we create a better experience for our customers? If you'd like to join that conversation, head on over to prooftoproduct.com/labs to learn more. But today, we're going to dive right into our episode with Reese Spikerman. Hey, Reese, welcome to Proof to Product.
Katie, I'm so excited to be here. I have been watching you and your stuff and what you're doing in this world for quite a while. So this is really an honor to be here having this conversation with you.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much. That's really sweet of you. Let's start at the top. Who do you work with and how do you help them?
Great question. I work primarily with product-based business owners who have e-commerce websites. So they aren't necessarily only selling through something like Etsy or Instagram, right? They're going to have an online presence that they're directly selling through on their websites. And a lot of the work I do is helping them leverage their website, leverage their email list so that they don't burn out, because many of the people I come from, and they're primarily women, are confused and overwhelmed over where they should prioritize. And so a lot of the work I really do is helping them figure out what's important, what's going to give them the biggest bang for their buck in terms of time, because that's really one of their most limited commodities. And the biggest way I do this, Katie, is helping them put themselves in their customer shoes and seeing their website, their emails, or even things like, how is the process from going to seeing an Instagram post to their website? What's that like? What is the customer not able to tell them that is creating friction or making it difficult to want to buy from them? And how can we turn those things around so that the customer feels really excited to want to buy? And that's like everything from design elements to the words that we use in our copy, in our website, in our emails. And I came here, Katie, because I got my degree in journalism and I also really loved design. And that's part of why I have enjoyed following you, is I love a good aesthetic. I almost went into working for Hallmark. And then over time I evolved and I didn't want to work in the media. I didn't want to put my journalism degree to work. I became a website designer maybe 15 years ago. And over time it evolved and I brought back in my journalism skills with writing. And now I work mostly as a consultant. I coach people, I run group programs. So that's kind of the too long didn't read of what I do now.
I love it. And I love what you were talking about regarding the customer journey. I think so often in our business, we're looking at it from our own viewpoint as the business owner. We're looking at it from an operational standpoint, a cost standpoint, like how are we going to make whatever we're trying to do happen? But we need to really flip it around and look at it with fresh eyes from our customer's perspective of how can we, to your point, reduce friction that makes it easier for them to purchase from us and be a lifelong customer of ours. So, you know, you've worked with a wide range of e-commerce brands which has given you a unique perspective as to what's working and what's not working in the e-com space. Before we head into some tactical strategies, I would love to hear, what trends are you seeing in the e-com space that our audience should be paying attention to?
That's a great question. One of the interesting things I'm seeing, and we are going to dig into this later, is I have noticed a lot of e-commerce sites getting very beautifully branded designs done on their website. As someone who appreciates a good aesthetic, I've noticed we're seeing a lot of strong color work, for example, indie brands becoming more branded. In other words, like really turning themselves into the kind of branding that we might associate with a bigger brand name. And I found that interesting. And I wonder sometimes if they're shooting themselves in the foot by looking so glossy that they lose the thing that makes people sometimes shop with indie brands, like that. I don't want to say a homegrown feel. It's not so much that, but there is something I think to be said for too much polish. But I'm seeing this a lot. When I go and I look at website galleries and things and I look at the e-commerce sites, I'm seeing this, like a very strong color, visual driven aesthetic. The other trend that I'm seeing is, it's kind of advanced, I think, for most of the people who are listening to this, and it's stuff I love, but I think it's a lot of people aren't quite there yet. AI, like artificial intelligence, is being used more and more. And I'll give you an example, I think that will make sense to your audience. You can do something like, you can buy a chatbot like that a third party service provides for you, and you can actually train your chatbot to answer questions and offer advice contextually. So meaning, if they're on a certain product page, the chatbot knows, hey, do you have any questions about the Christmas card collection? And then if someone asks questions, the chatbot has been trained, the artificial intelligence, to answer about that collection. And so that's one really interesting way that AI is being used to help improve customer service. And the other big trend I'm seeing is SMS. So people using text messaging. And I find this to be the thing where it's like, people say, should my business use it? And it's not a yes or no answer. It's a very much, it depends. It depends on who is your customer. What's your market like? Are they heavy phone users? How do they use their phone? And you have to be really careful with SMS that you don't SMS people too much. And so there's like a whole nuance to SMS marketing. But I think it's an interesting way to get in front of people as inboxes become increasingly clogged.
Mm-hmm. I'm over here nodding my head yes, because it's been something I've been tracking as well. I agree 100% with you that you need to know your demographics and you need to know who your audience and your customers are, because again, if they're not heavy phone users, if they're shopping mainly on a browser, you know, or a tablet versus your phone, that's a different experience. I've seen this done successfully with larger brands and also service-based businesses as well as product-based businesses with the SMS trend. I'm wondering if, I know Shopify is building out different apps and available like opportunities for people to use SMS through their platform. Is that where you're seeing most of the smaller brands leveraging it, or are they looking to third-party add-ons?
I've seen it mainly with third-party add-ons, possibly because my understanding is the Shopify integration is still kind of new. Mm-hmm. And my experience with Shopify, depending on the level you're at, it's not sometimes as robust as the features that you're going to get on a third-party app. Now, with that said, we could go down a whole rabbit hole as to whether you should be putting a ton of third-party apps on your site if you're running Shopify. Like, there's always a balance here.
Right.
If it were me and it were my product-based business, I would probably, because I come from a tech background, pretty carefully look at vetting a third-party service. But the other thing I would look really closely at are, what are the rates? SMS can get expensive super fast.
Totally.
I mean, and so you have to make sure you have a budget for it and you're really thinking about this. Because if you're sending out 10,000 messages, you want to know what you're going to be paying for each of those messages that go out, or for 10,000 recipients.
Totally. This is totally a rabbit hole that I wasn't anticipating us going down, but I find it fascinating. And I think the clients that I've talked to who are testing out SMS, they're actually a couple of them are using Klaviyo's system because that's where their email is. And so then they're using the SMS option through Klaviyo. Am I pronouncing that right? I always pronounce it. Is that how you pronounce it?
What Klaviyo? Is it Klaviyo, Klaviyo? I go either way. It depends
on
the day.
I'm not sure either. I'll just go with Klaviyo or Klaviyo. But my point is they're experimenting with that. And we talked about adjusting their marketing budgets that if they want to test with SMS, maybe they pull back on their paid advertising in other areas. So, you know, Facebook ads or whatever, and not do as much of that just to test and see if the SMS is actually going to work. Because to your point too, we're inundated with ads on social media platforms. We're inundated with our inbox right now. So I do think for the right brands, I'm not telling everyone that's listening right now to run out and test SMS, but I do think for the right brands with the right audience who are truly, you know, shopping from their phones, it could be a good way to build a stronger connection with those customers. Okay. I thank you for that. That was really fascinating to hear what you're seeing in on the trend side. Let's talk about one of your pitch bullet points that you sent me was finding hidden money on our e-commerce shop, leaks to avoid and ways to boost online sales. So what are three common mistakes that might be costing e-commerce brands big money and how do we fix them?
Okay. Yes. I love this. I could talk all day about it, but let's just do three. So the first one is your website is loading too slowly. And to what we discussed when it comes to things like adding on apps, whether you're on Shopify or Woo or whatever platform you're on, apps are the kind of thing that if you aren't careful can lead to your phone loading more or your website loading more slowly. And the reason I said the word phone is because this is where it really matters. People are increasingly impatient. Phones do not in general have the same kind of like processor that our desktops do, but we know at least for most part, at least 50% of our customers are coming to our sites on their phone. They aren't going to wait. They aren't going to wait longer than 3 seconds. And frankly, these days, I think it's shorter than that. There's some research that from Google that says that. So I was on a site today and it was not an e-commerce site. It was a service-based business. And this person had clearly gotten a lot of beautiful branding done. And it was nearly non-functional on my phone because the priority over gorgeous typography and all this color work and all of her photos had made it so that it was a very heavy site. And to that point, one of the things that can really weigh down your website are things like videos and photos. And it's tough. If you run a product-based business, you've got to show photos of your products. Finding the sweet spot where you have clear, crisp photos, but you aren't killing your website speed is like not a fun and easy thing to do. But a lot of times Shopify will help by doing something for you called lazy loading, which means images on your, say, your collections page are not going to necessarily show up till people start to scroll down the page. So they're kind of like delaying the loading of those. But that was number one. Your website's loading too slowly and that will send someone away. They just don't have the patience. Now, number two, I see this so much. And it's like the minute I tell people it, they're like, oh, I get it. But a lot of people's out of the box themes and templates come with social media icons right in the header of the site, at the top part of the site, which is the most important part of a website because it's the thing we see on every single page. Over and over again, it's the very first thing that loads. And do you know what happens? We live in a culture of people who are addicted to social media. They see the little Instagram icon, they click it, and you, as the shop owner, think, yes, they clicked it. They will go and follow me on Instagram and we will be friends forever. But no, they get to Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is. They see their little notification icon. They forget about you. They forget about your shop. They're gone. So our goal is to keep them on our freaking sites, not send them back off to social media. You have something to say, so I'm going to let you say it.
No, I'm over here nodding my head yes, because I fully agree with you. Our goal here is to use these marketing avenues, these social media platforms to bring people to our site, not take them from our site to social. So that's a really great point. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a tough one for sometimes people to wrap their heads around. I think they've been conditioned by social media, by the culture around us, that they need to be advertising their profiles. Let me just say, you could pop them in the footer of your site. I'm not going to argue with you if you do that, but please take them out of the header of your website if you want people to stay there. So yeah. Number three, Katie, is a lot of times I see sites that are very product or business owner focused. So here's what I mean. You've spent 3 years doing R&D or design, bringing your product to market. And so of course you're invested in your baby. I totally get that. But what happens is customers can pick up when you're so focused on what you think is amazing about your product, and it doesn't feel to them like you're actually caring about them. And this will lead a little bit into like some things that we can do instead. But very specifically, I see this a lot in service-based business, but frankly, even with artisan-based product businesses, on the about page, they're leading with their story. The word I is in there a lot. I started this business because of XYZ. I'll even see this on homepage. On the product page, we'll see things like the features that the product maker or curator think are really amazing, but it isn't like, so why does this matter to the customer? So the biggest deal is that will send people away is when your site isn't really focused enough on your customer. And we'll talk in a minute about what you can do to change that, to like really make it customer centric. And this is a tough thing for people to understand, because when you're in your business and you're operating it, you are juggling so many things, right? I get that. Like, I totally have empathy for that. And so it's very hard for you to step away from everything you're juggling and get that like bird's eye view of, but how is this being received by my customers? And that's part of why I do the work I do, because sometimes we're just so close to something, we can't see the way other people are receiving the information, the communication, the photos, whatever it is that we're giving them.
Absolutely. So this was a few months ago, maybe it was even a year ago. I can't even keep track of dates in my head now. We did a training inside of my labs program about product descriptions, and it was really impactful. It was led by a copywriter, Perna Malik, and she kept really focusing and emphasizing on the fact that you need to focus on the benefits to your audience, not even the features of the product, but what does that feature do to enhance your customer's life? What kind of emotions does it evoke in them? What, you know, how can we make this more about the customer and why they absolutely need to add it to their cart and check out? And so I love that you're sharing this, because I feel like it's full loop all the way around of, you know, talking about how we can really use the photos and the words and the layout of our pages to enhance that customer experience and show them why they absolutely need to add that. Okay. So those are three common mistakes, which I'm over here nodding my head ferociously. Yes. What are three sales strategies that our listeners can do to boost sales in their shop, to collect some of that lost money or hidden money that they might be leaking without knowing it?
Yes. I'm glad we're going to do this, because how depressing is it to just be told what not to do? And then you're kind of like demoralized, like, well, great. Thanks a lot. I just spent 40 hours of my own blood, sweat, and tears making this website. And now you're telling me I got to redo the thing, but let's give you some quick wins. So the first is going to bounce off what we just said. And I love that you brought someone in your lab who is basically speaking my language. She's pretty much is what I would advocate for. But here's the quick hack to it. One of the most powerful things you can do in your copy, on your website, or even in your emails, is use the word you. When we use the word you, person reading that feels like we're speaking directly to them. So as you go through your website, start to think about, is there a way for me to take this headline or this sentence and rework it a little bit so I could bring the word you in there? And if we're talking just riffing about product descriptions, you might have gone from previously listing a feature. I know a lot of the people listening here are in the card and stationery market. So it might be something like gold foil embossed, right? What we could transform that into is the exquisite gold foil embossing on this card will make anyone who receives your card. So we'd rewrite that. The exquisite gold foil embossing on this will make anyone who receives your card feel like the most special person in the world. That's actually horrible copy. It's very generic, but it illustrates my point. So it, like what you were saying, Katie, we're helping paint that picture in our customer's mind about what our product can do for them. And that's one example of using that word you to do so. So that's the first way you can really, really boost your site. Just where can you use the word you? So you're talking directly to the customer.
Yep. That's perfect. Yeah.
The second one is a little bit of a design tweak or hack here. You've got your buy now buttons, or in the case of say your homepage, a lot of times we'll find at the top of the homepage, you'll have a shop button, you know, in that top main area before you scroll. I would love to see you make sure your buttons are all the same color and that that color isn't, so number two, isn't used pretty much on anything else for the most part or very subtly. But three, speaking of subtlety, it should not be a subtle button. And we're going to dig into this, I think, a little bit if we have time. But if you've got this beautiful neutral palette, you know, it looks like a nude lipstick type of look, you can keep that. But I beg of you, find a way to get like a berry red color lipstick for your button color. And it doesn't have to be red. Right. But what I'm saying is it needs to be bright. It needs to be bold. It needs to be big enough and make them all the same color. And I'll tell you why. Think about what happens when we go to Amazon. We've got to talk about this elephant in the room because it's training our customers.
Yeah.
When we go shop on Amazon, it's always an orange button. Like when you want to add the thing to the cart, it's always an orange button. You know, in the back of your mind, subconsciously, that's the thing. So we want to train our customers. This is the color to go. Like hit this and you're good. You're off to the races.
I hadn't even thought about that. You're right. It is an orange button. But it is. It's consistent throughout the whole. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. What's our third way to boost sales in our shop?
So the third one, I want to bridge this path between social media and the website that we've talked about. Now, this is a hack I like to do. Some people have a different opinion about it, but on your Instagram profile, I am not a fan of things like the link programs that let you show 10 different things to choose from for like when they hit the LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
I instead recommend to my clients, they update the link to whatever it is they are promoting at any given time. So for example, we've got Black Friday coming up. And if they know they're going to be running a special product promotion on Black Friday, there's a couple things they can be doing. Ahead of time, they could change the link in bio to go to an email signup page to get on the advanced list for email list only deals. And when that link in bio is directly to an email signup page, the path from A to B has nothing interrupting in between. We are not making people think and decide through 10 different choices.
Right.
Or on the day of the sale, or let's say they're running a new product launch. They've got a new card line. I want you to link directly to like that product or that collection page. And yes, this means you're going to have to change it out. And sometimes maybe you're just popping it to the homepage, but whenever possible, I actually like to bypass the homepage and get people the clear path to whatever it is I'm selling or promoting at the time, just to remove that friction we talked about.
Yeah, that's a great tip. We have one that we use through our site that has, I think, 4 or 5 links, and that's what we use for just an ongoing basis. But anytime we're actively selling anything or promoting anything, we do put that singular link in our social profile. And I think that's a great recommendation that you had to send them. You know, at times there's times where we want to push them to a newsletter sign up page. At times we want to push them to a certain product category page. There's certain times that we want them to, the call to action is going to change based upon what we're doing. That makes a whole lot of sense. You know, we've teased out a little bit that there's this trend towards making beautiful sites, but those beautiful sites aren't always necessarily having the best conversion rates, meaning people may come, they may visit, they may look around, but they aren't necessarily buying something. So talk to me about this. What are most people missing here? How could they make their pretty sites convert more strongly?
Ooh, my goodness. I feel like we could do a round table between us all afternoon on this. I read this study a few years ago, and I don't know if it still holds true, that it was finding that people who were pinning things on Pinterest were buying less often because they almost felt like the act of making a pin, and I'm going to tie this to the question, the act of making a pin or putting it in their collection gave them what they were looking for, alleviated the anxiety maybe that they had when they were looking for an object, which is what a lot of times will happen. There's an anxiety or a desire, and that's why people buy from us. Right. So what does this have to do with aesthetics? Sometimes if you make a really gorgeous website, you're proud of it. You love to look at it. You just sit back and you're like, I love looking at my website. Well, so do your customers. And you think this is a good thing. But I surmise, and I'll back this up in a sec, but it's kind of like the Pinterest thing where we've given them fulfillment from the beauty of it, and we haven't provoked the desire for them to buy whatever it is we want to sell to them. Instead, we're so concentrated on making a gorgeous aesthetic experience that that experience is competing with the more like persuasively driven experience of going from point A, leading them to B, getting them to your product page, and getting them to either hit buy. And I want to clarify for anyone listening, rarely is it that the conversion path is on the same day and direct. So I stumble across Katie's new stationery collection, and this is my first time I've ever been exposed to her. Generally speaking, and it's not like 100% true, I might not buy on that day. Okay. So I want to clarify that, but back to the aesthetic thing. A lot of your listeners have this gorgeous stationery they've designed or curated, and we want that stationery to not be competing with anything else for attention. When the website itself has a very strong color palette, for example, or you have photography of your products and there's a lot of noise in the photo. And what I mean is you've got it, a lot going on in the background, a setting against this luxury apartment sort of thing. What's happening is our brains visually have to sort through all that visual noise in the back of our minds. And we're distracted so much and we're almost overwhelmed visually that your card, which should be the star of the show in this case, is really like kind of like in the supporting cast. And we aren't provoking the desire as much for the card. We're like obscuring it with a lot of noise. And the other problem with a pretty aesthetic relates to one of the things I was telling you about that buy button being like big, bright, and bold. Let's say again, that you went and you got this really modern looking color. For example, right now, teal plus light pink is a really cool combination. I love it. I think it's so fun. But if your site has a lot of dominance with those colors, how will your buy button stand out against that backdrop? What would you make it? Would you make it white? Would you make it black? But even then, if a significant amount of your background or your boxes and things are in these very dominant colors, it's very hard for you to get the things that you need to stand out, to get them to buy, to stand out. And those are things like your product description, your buttons, your related product photos. So that's why I tend to advocate for a very minimal aesthetic on e-commerce sites, because it lets your products be the star of the show. It makes sure you don't have anything visually competing with the things like the buy button, your product description copy, even little blurbs and bits of copy and photos on your homepage. And when we have too beautiful of an aesthetic, it can get in our way. It can get in our buyer's way.
It's fascinating. We had, everything you're saying reminds me of previous conversations I've had either here on the podcast or in our labs program. And we have some, I'll link them in the show notes. I think there's some related content that our audience would find helpful here. You know, we've talked a lot of great topics today. And if our listeners could take action on one piece of advice from this episode, what would you want them to focus on?
Oh my goodness. Well, it's the hardest piece of advice, but the most important. Try and start putting themselves in their customer's shoes. And there's a tangible way they can do this. If they're trying to wrap their head around, how do I do this? You can start, there's some programs and tools that you can also pay to do this for you, but you can start by getting people to go through your website while you observe over their shoulder. And that could be even virtually over Zoom. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure you don't coach them. You want to make sure they are people who you're pretty sure aren't going to either A, try to please you, or B, try to be helpful with feedback. The idea is you want to see where are they getting stuck. you want to understand later, why did they make the choice they did? Why did they click this button? Why did they go here and not there? That can help you start to think about what your experience is like. And this goes for your emails too. For example, are you really sure that all that beautiful HTML graphical email that you spent 5 hours making is being seen in like 50% of people's email inboxes because they might be blocking images? So it's thinking about things like that, like in context, what's going on in my customer's life? How are they using this site? How are they going to be using it on their phone? Are there 10 kids running around screaming? If so, is the path from A to B really clear for them? Because most people aren't going to spend nearly the amount of time on your site or in your emails that you spent making them. Mm-hmm. So the more efficient and straightforward you can make it, the more you're making your customer's life easier. So basically, biggest piece of advice, start trying to think about putting yourself in your customer's shoes and thinking from her perspective.
I love that. And for those listening, we've used a tool called Crazy Egg in the past, which tracks your website and shows you, I think it'll do up to 100 visitors for free. And it'll show you kind of where people are clicking and where they're hot on your site, where they're cold on your site, where you kind of lose them. I know there's plenty of other, you know, site mapping tools out there as well, but I did want to share that one resource since we have experience with it and have used that. Reese, what's next for you? What do you have coming up that you want to share with our audience?
Wow, what's next? Well, we're talking in October and I'm in the middle of running my group mentorship program, which goes till the end of March. And I will be running another round of that in March. So that's for women who are in e-commerce. So we keep it just for women. It's a relatively small program. But otherwise, I'm supporting people in Q4. And if your audience would like, I have a gift I'd love to share with them, if that's okay with you, Katie.
Yeah, for sure.
But we talked a lot about website in this, but to help them think about their product pages, I have a persuasive product page roadmap that they can download. It just kind of walks them through and it also helps them think even more about putting yourself in your customer's shoes in a really tangible way.
Yeah.
They can get that at designbyreese.com/roadmap.
Okay, cool. We will be sure to include that in the show notes for everybody so they can get that free gift. Thank you, Reese. That's so kind. All right. Well, where can people find you if they want to follow you on social media or check out your services on your website?
Yes, they can hit me up on Instagram. So I'm Reese Spikerman. S-P-Y-K-E-R-M-A-N. Someone told me once it sounds like a superhero name. I'm going to just like take that as a compliment.
I think
it's kind of cool.
That is cool.
Like, where's my cape? And they can, if they just go to designbyreese.com, I'm going to be like full disclosure here because this is how I roll. Like, if you're going to work with me, I think it's really helpful to know what am I like? I am the plumber with the leaky pipes right now with my website. Because I do it all myself. I don't have like a services and offers page up, but that doesn't mean I'm not helping people if they want private one-on-one coaching or want to talk more about getting like a website review. There's a contact form on there on designbyreese.com. And meanwhile, Katie, I'm hoping in Q4 to spend some time actually like taking my own advice and getting my website up in shape.
I totally understand that. No judgment here. Reese, thank you so much for your time today. This was incredible. And we really appreciate all of your thoughtful advice. And thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Katie. I loved it.
All right, friends, two big takeaways for you today are: one, think of your customer as you're making bigger decisions about technology you're using and marketing that you're planning and implementing. And two, let's remove as much friction as possible from our customers' buying pathway. Reese mentioned using direct links to social, checking our site speed, and making those buy buttons big and bold. Seriously, let's make it as easy as possible for our customers to purchase from us. Big thanks to Reese for joining me today. In today's episode, I mentioned our labs training with Perna Malik of Content Bistro, where we focused on writing product descriptions that convert. Perna is amazing at what she does, and I want to remind our labs members to definitely go back and revisit that training. And for those of you that aren't in labs, if you're not on that wait list, go join. But also, Perna was on episode 154 of Proof to Product, so definitely go check out that episode, and you can learn a little bit about her and some of the things we touched on in labs too. All right, friends, thank you for joining me today. We'll include all the links to Reese's free gift, labs, and Perna's podcast episode in the show notes so you can quickly grab them. Have a wonderful week, and I'll be back with a new episode next week.